Welcome to the Witchy Spellcast. I'm Kara, joined by Saya and Rowan, your mystical guides. Whether you're a seasoned witch or a curious seeker, join us to explore spellcraft, herbal remedies, and more. Let's embrace the enchantment, unlock secrets, and discover the magic within. Your magical journey starts here.
Welcome back, casters. Casters, it's been a few weeks in our lives, but probably no time in yours, if you're listening to this directly after the last. Today is a deity day. Try saying that six times fast. Today is a deity day. We're going to talk about love deities. Valentine's Day is coming up. It's almost spring. It puts me in the mood to talk about love and romance, and it reminds me of that painting, The Swing.
You know, Fragonard.
Mm-hmm.
That was the best collection in New York, by the way. Like, hands down, my favorite place that we went in New York was the Fragonard collection.
Yeah, nice. It was an excellent experience.
It was gorgeous. So,
but that kind of, I don't know, like hyper romantic image is what comes to mind around Valentine's Day and around early spring for me. I don't know about you guys, but that's what evokes my brain.
Makes sense.
The Rococo time period in general.
The Rococo time period. You know. And like, you know, what is it? Like Pride and Prejudice and like Bridgerton, all of the most romantic. Yes.
Like Regency, such
Rococo.
Like pastel flowers. Mm-hmm. And
yes,
like gold leaf, and you know
the
what I'm
hyper femme in me.
Yeah, like
garden tea parties.
Out. Oh yes!
Oh my god, we need to do that gloves. One. A little garden hat, gloves, pedestals. You know the things. Today we're going to talk about love deities because love is in the air. St. Valentine's Day is coming up. My 12-year anniversary just happened yesterday. I know. Congratulations. Thank you. 12 years together, 2 years married. It's been bananas. It's been a third of my life with the same man. Can you imagine?
I mean, I've been with my husband for 15 years. So
that's fair. That's also fair.
I've been with my wife for 11.
What? Okay, fine. Jesus, I'll take it out.
We got married after our 10-year anniversary.
We got married on our 10-year, so we just didn't have to remember more dates.
See, that's what we started with, but our 10-year anniversary would have been a Wednesday.
So this will actually tie into something I'm going to talk about later. But there are certain cultures that the priest or officiant will choose what day, location, and time you get married based on your zodiac.
I like that. That's
interesting.
So, I don't know how I feel about somebody choosing all that for me, but it is interesting.
I actually know somebody who did that. So we'll talk about that later. But so, like I said, St. Valentine's Day is coming up, and so I figured what better person to start with, not necessarily a deity, but St. Valentine himself. So there's a lot of different stories about St. Valentine or the Valentinos. Some myths, St. Valentine is multiple people called the Valentinos or Valentinos. In most other stories, it's just one guy. And the story says that Valentine was a Roman priest during the 3rd century AD. And during that time, Emperor Claudius II had banned marriage for young men. And he did this because he thought unmarried single men made better soldiers. Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, that tracks. Yeah. I mean, the ancient Greeks thought that too. But they just made them all gay.
Also facts.
Big facts. So during the time of St. Valentine, it was illegal for young men to marry, regardless of like how much in love they were. So Valentine was just like, nah, dude, I'm still going to marry these people. And he was continuing to marry people in secret for years. Ultimately, he was discovered and was imprisoned for that. And he was in prison for, I think, like a year. And he ended up like befriending his jailer's daughter, who I think was blind at the in one of the stories. Yes. Some of the stories she's not blind. Some of the stories she's not even in. So we're going to say that she was a blind jailer's daughter who befriended Valentine while he's in prison, awaiting his execution. The night before, or the morning of, depends on the story again, his execution, he writes a letter to the jailer's daughter and signs it, you know, from your Valentine, and then goes forth and is executed. And the theory is that this is where Valentine, like Valentine's Day cards come from. And why we call people our Valentine is because he showed the daughter, you know, this form of love, right?
Yeah.
Which, you know, friendship is a form of love. It's platonic. Yeah.
One of the stories I read about it was that he actually helped cure her of her blindness.
I did hear that as well.
Yeah, like, which is one of the reasons he became a saint.
And so he ended up being the saint of a bunch of different things. Primarily, what we know him for is love, happy marriages, but he's also the saint of beekeepers and epilepsy, which the epilepsy could potentially tie into the jailer's daughter's ailments.
Yeah.
And her being allegedly cured by Valentine. But a lot of his life details before his, you know, saintism.
Saintism?
Before he became a saint. I'm not sure how you would say that. Before he became a saint.
Pre-sainthood?
Yeah. There we go. His life prior to being captured and executed is widely unknown. Like, we don't really know much about him. And yet we have this massive holiday dedicated to his legacy, I guess. Which, to me, is bananas to think of. You don't know anything about this guy, aside from why he died.
There's definitely things that got lost in history, though.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Just like everything. I mean, it was Roman times, which means Valentine's Day started in Italy. By the way, woot woot.
Woo! Recognize.
Recognize. The city of love is actually Italy.
Yeah. Well, isn't Rome. Is it Italian the language of love?
It is.
Or is it? That's exactly.
I think everybody says it's like French, but here's the thing.
Yeah.
Valentine's Day started in Rome, which is in Italy, which we're going to say Italian is the language of love.
There we go. Also, I don't know if you've ever heard French and. You know, no offense to any French-speaking listeners, but it doesn't sound very romantic, in my opinion. And I took 4 years of the language. Not in my brain, it doesn't sound romantic.
I think
it's not as...
A lot of people do think that it sounds romantic, but I think probably what you're picking up on as to why it doesn't seem very romantic to you is the nasal quality.
That's exactly why.
It's spoken because it's like...
It's very...
It is very nasally.
It's very nasal. Like...
Yeah.
I know a lot of people in America, when they're taking French classes, they actually do better at speaking French if they have a cold when they're taking the class.
So something I learned in my multiple language learning lessons is most of the time, if you put on like a fake accent, like if you're trying to learn German, if you put on a German accent, and speak the German words, it sounds more correct. So when I was taking French, I would "titi baguette," you know, sounds better if I'm saying it with the French accent, you know.
Titi baguette. All of our French
titty baguette. That's what you anyway. Go with. You go with a titty baguette.
I don't know where that. It's from somewhere.
It is from something. It is from a movie. I don't remember the movie, but it is from a movie.
I'll take your word for it.
It is. And it's the same thing with me learning Polish. If I say the words in a Polish accent or like a Germanic or Slavic accent, it's easier to pronounce. Anyway, that's to me why French doesn't sound romantic, is because of the nasal. Whatever. Again, that's a sidetrack. Side rant.
Yeah.
So moving forward. It is hard. It's hard when you have the sniffles and asthma and are talking a lot. So,
feel that.
Yeah. So moving, I guess, eastern direction. Eastward.
Towards the east.
Yeah, moving in an eastern direction. We are going to land in India, where in Hinduism, the god of love, desire, and passion is known as Kamadeva. And this male god has such an interesting story. I knew nothing about it. So I'm going to describe to you this deity and tell me if it sounds familiar, okay? According to Hindu mythology, Kamadeva is the son of the creator and is often depicted as a handsome young man who wields a bow made of sugarcane and arrows that are tipped in flowers and flies.
Cupid?
So,
Cupid?
Yeah. So that's something I actually noticed coming across all of these different deities that are associated with love. They all wield a bow and arrow and fly around for some reason. And they all shoot people to fall in love with arrows and bows. Sometimes the arrows have honey. Sometimes the bow is made of sugar cane. It's just really strange. It's like the twins and the wolves things that we talked about. But this is like
love and wolves.
This is
why are loves and bows
deities and bows and arrows. Why? Okay, cool. So, bow made of sugarcane. Arrows that are tipped with flowers, because okay, cool. One of his most
hurt
allegedly, but listen to this story. Listen to this story. Okay, so this story is about to get absolutely crazy. So Kamadeva, he's already established, right? He is the god, love, passion, desire, shooting people with arrows. People are falling in love. You know, he's helping populate the world, etc. Cut to this story. So, one of the most famous tales involving Kamadeva is his role in the marriage of Shiva, one of the principal deities in Hinduism. The story goes that after the death of Shiva's first wife, Sati, he became deeply withdrawn and immersed himself in meditation. Meanwhile, the demon Tarakasura was wreaking havoc on the gods and had obtained a boon that he could only be killed by Shiva's son. So only the son of Shiva could kill this demon. Meanwhile, Shiva is down in meditation because his first wife has passed. So he is not trying to fuck anybody and create another son and all this other stuff. So clearly, we have an impasse. So, the gods decide that this demon is wreaking so much havoc on us, and the only way to arouse Shiva from his meditation is to get Kamadeva to shoot arrows at him and hope that one lands and that Shiva falls in love and generates another son, which Kamadeva's like, oh no, not really my, like, yes, it's my job, but like, what the fuck? I could die. Shiva is the big guy. Like, he's not necessarily known for his patience. So the other gods end up like talking him into it. And the plan is that Kamadeva is going to shoot his arrows at Shiva, arouse him, and marry Shiva off to what's his second wife's name? Parvati, so that they could produce a son to defeat this demon. So he agrees, ultimately. Kamadeva agrees. He knows the risk. He's freaked out. He could potentially die. So he shoots his arrows at Shiva, ultimately rousing Shiva from his meditation. Shiva is irate, like pissed the absolute fuck off. He opens his third eye, because in Hinduism, sometimes there are other eyeballs and limbs, etc. Listen, I get it. Slavic mythology, there are multiple faces on one head. So, I get it. Shiva opens his third eye and emits a beam of fire from it, incinerating Kamadeva, turning him into ash. However, after Kamadeva's dead, Shiva does fall in love and produce a son and ultimately defeats the demon, you know, that was torturing all of the gods. In some of the stories, the gods who sent Kamadeva ultimately to his death resurrect him from his ashes, and he is granted like godhood in a spiritual form. He doesn't have a physical form anymore. Let's see. Oh, here we go. This Kamadeva is later resurrected by the gods or attains a spiritual form, symbolizing the eternal nature of love and desire. The story of Kamadeva highlights the power of love and its ability to transcend boundaries, even in the face of great obstacles and sacrifices. He remains an important figure in Hindu mythology, symbolizing the force of desire that drives creation and the cycle of life. I thought that was really cool, but kind of a dick move on the other gods' behalf. Like, you could have woken him up any other way.
Right.
Why you gotta put our guy out there? So, I think Hinduism is really cool. There are so many gods. There are so many deities. And they all have really intricate lore and, like, backstories. And they just look cool to me. I'm sure that's insulting, but they look really interesting. Anyway, like, Kali Ma looks cool as shit. No one can tell me otherwise. You know Kali Ma.
Yeah.
She has six arms and a long tongue and murderous intent and a necklace of heads, you know.
But also, you definitely would not want to cross her.
No, she is, however, she is like, she's very slay. She's giving slay. Dark divine. She's giving goddess of revenge. You know what I mean? She's giving oath of vengeance. Sorry, that's what my current Baldur's Gate character is right now. It's a paladin with the oath of vengeance. So witch is out here killing people. And is a drow. So.
Love it.
Right? I made them the biggest twink I could.
Oh my god.
I'm not even joking. I'll send you a picture later. They're the biggest twink. Anyway. So one side, we have romantic love and sexual love. On one side, we have the love of your fellow man and, you know, the love of your community, which I think Kamadeva really encapsulates in that story. The love of your community enough to sacrifice yourself to help that community, etc. You know, we're not all lucky enough to be reincarnated immediately, but, you know, he was, so great for him. If that's not your vibe, if sexual love isn't your vibe, or if romantic love isn't your vibe, or if you're a single Pringle out there, we have Our Lady Lilith, who, if you don't know anything about Lilith, she is primarily from ancient Mesopotamian mythology and also Jewish folklore. However, there are some key differences. She's often depicted as a female demon or a dark entity that's associated with themes of things like seduction and rebellion and overall nastiness. According to like primarily Jewish folklore, Lilith was Adam's first wife, who was created at the same time and from the same earth as Adam instead of his rib, like Eve would later be. Lilith is depicted this way as like this rebellious succubus, sexual deviant, because she refused to submit to Adam's authority in the mythology. And that led to conflict, and eventually her voluntarily leaving the paradise known as Garden of Eden. Sometimes she's actually portrayed as a child-killing demon because her refusal to stay with Adam did not bear children.
Mm-hmm.
So because she stood for autonomy, she is now depicted as a child-killing evil succubi demon, which seems a bit fucked up and wrong, in my opinion. She's also seen as like a seducer of men, like a cave dweller who like dwells in like damp, dark, desolate places. But like over time, interpretations of her have like kind of changed into this like anti-patriarchal, free, sexually liberated female entity, deity. I'm not sure what phrase you would use there. I'm going to say deity just because it seems correct.
She's one of the leaders of the dark divine feminine.
Yes, that is correct. And she's very cool. I think it's just probably because I'm biased and I'm doing a bunch of research on her, but I think she's probably one of the most relatable deities that I've ever researched, just because she doesn't stand for any horseshit, you know? Like,
yeah,
she is her own self. And she isn't just so-and-so's something.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? She's not Adam's wife or so-and-so's mom. She is Lilith, which...
Yeah.
10 out of 10.
I am here for me and only me.
Exactly. Yeah. So she is often associated with dark divine feminine, like you said. But that is because of her portrayal as a rebellious and independent figure. In a lot of interpretations, which this really kind of bums me out, she embodies things like over-assertiveness. And I don't necessarily know if I like that.
So, depiction. And that's like, and this is something, because I've done a lot of research on divine feminine and Lilith too, right? And what it amounts to is when we're doing research with the divine feminine, a lot of these women figures are labeled as such from male points of view.
Correct. Yeah.
So their darkness, quote unquote, is these things that like over assertiveness and or like little things like that. When in reality it's something different.
Mm-hmm.
It's confidence. It's not over-assertive.
Exactly.
It's confidence.
Exactly.
And they don't want to give feminine, like they don't want to give females those qualities, and that's why they're considered masculine qualities. And then these are like those dark feminine qualities, right?
Quote unquote dark.
Yeah. Because of all that time of the very masculine, like throw on it.
Well, and you have to think, had they kept her story in the Bible, that would have given women something to look up to instead of encouraging women to be subservient to whoever their,
to their husband male. Or father or brother or
whomever. Whatever male is in their life. Yep. Yeah.
And that's...
So that kind of bums me out, but I really think if you're searching for somebody, a deity to look up to or to look into during the romantical period, which is what I'm going to call this time frame. I think looking into Lilith would be a great idea just because she embodies so many things that are that are a type of love, but it's primarily self-love. Like it takes a great act of self-love to stand up for yourself.
Yes.
To say like, no, I'm not going to be subservient to you. I'm going to live my own life. And I think that's a huge difference between her and somebody like Aphrodite or Freya, who are more along the lines of like that feminine, light feminine, excuse me. You know, so that's kind of like the all-encompassing thing that I have about deities. I kind of fell down a weird rabbit hole about looking at like other mythologies that we really don't talk about a whole lot on the channel or on the podcast. And like Hinduism, for instance, I have always found it fascinating, but it's such a huge undertaking because there are so many deities. There are thousands. And the same thing with, what is it, Chinese folklore that we talked a little bit about last episode with the Lunar New Year. It's just always something that's been fascinating, but I feel like I can't undertake because, one, I'm not part of that culture, and two, it is massive. But I did find something in Chinese folklore and mythology that does kind of tie into this, and that is the story of Rowan, you'll have to help me out with the pronunciation, but I'm pretty sure it's pronounced Yu Lao, Yuelao.
Seems about right.
Okay.
I would far from say that I'm an expert, though.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna say it's Yu Lao, just because the Lao part looks like the country Laos. So
makes sense.
Gonna say that. So in Chinese mythology, Yu Lao. This is actually kind of a cool one because it's gonna be a theory a lot of our listeners know, but don't know they know, or where it's from. So Yu Lao is known as the old man under the moon in Chinese mythology, and I think that's adorable because of course it is. Like, he's just an old man under the moon. Under the moon? Is he the DreamWorks guy? Like the little fisherman on the moon? Is that Yu Lao? Because I would 10 out of 10.
That would be
like a little. Right?
If that's the case, that's adorable.
Obviously, it's so cute. But he is the Chinese mythology and folklore person, character, who is associated with love and marriage. And according to legend, he is the god of marriage and is responsible for binding soulmates together.
Mm-hmm.
So the story goes that Yu Lao appears as an old wise man, and he carries a large book, and in that book are all of the marriages that will ever take place. He also carries a large bundle of red silk cord. And it's believed that Yu Lao uses his supernatural powers to connect destined lovers by tying them together with a red cord, which is where the red string theory comes from. That a lot of people think that there is an invisible red string that connects you to your fate, which is, it's the red string of fate. It's Yu Lao. It's the old man under the moon. It's him. So
I'm envisioning Zuko's uncle.
Uncle Iroh?
Yes.
Yes.
That is the vision that I have right now. That is what he is.
Just a horrible old man.
Yeah.
Who just has all the wisdoms.
All the wisdoms.
Yeah.
All the wisdoms.
Yeah. I was going for more of a Master Oogway from Kung Fu Panda. Because also old and adorable and wise, but is also a turtle. So the red string of fate is said to be invisible. And although it may stretch, tangle, get caught on things, it never breaks. That symbolizes the enduring connection between soulmates, regardless of time, place, or circumstance. The legend of Yu Lao has been passed down through generations in Chinese culture, and he is often invoked by people seeking love or hoping to find their true soulmate. And Rowan, we actually talked about this last episode, it's the reason why a lot of brides wear red. So it's a red
that
string.
That makes sense.
Right? So when I read that, I was like, oh my gosh, we full just circle. Went over this. Full
so
circle
that's
moment.
Why the brides wear red.
It's one of the many reasons.
One of the
it's
many why, reasons.
Oh, and why
red
is
seems like luck.
Color of love. Yeah. So I thought that was really cool. Let's see. There are various rituals and customs associated with Yu Lao, such as offerings and prayers that are made to him in specified temples. So he has his own temples in China, which is very cool. And during the Chinese Valentine's Day, which is called the Kuai Shai Festival, which is Q-I-X-I Festival. I'm pretty sure it's Kuai Shai.
Terrible at
they
pronouncing
give,
things.
No. It might be Kuai Shai. Anyway, this Chinese Valentine's Day. They is celebrated by praying to Yu Lao, giving him offerings, going to his temple, giving your significant other a red string bracelet, things of that nature. Very cute stuff going on, big time. And it happens around about the same time, too. So,
love it.
The concept of the red string of fate has also permeated other East Asian cultures, including Japan and Korea, with similar legends existing about the binding power of destiny in matters of love and relationships. Overall, Yu Lao and the Red String of Fate represent the belief in destiny and the enduring power of love to unite kindred souls. So it's not just, again, sexual love, because your soulmate can be platonic. Your soulmate could be your twin flame, as it were. Wait, I'm not going to that entire cult, but sorry, I just came off watching that documentary.
Well, there's like three different like thoughts. There's a soulmate, twin flame, and there's another one. I can't remember what it is. But they're like, you can also look at it astrologically too for those three things.
Right. So your red string, you might have more than one because it's not just, it's for your fate. You know, fate leads in all directions depending, you know. It could tie off to someone else throughout the day, throughout the year, throughout your lifetime. Because, you know, if your soulmate dies, the soul doesn't die. The body. Anyway, sorry, that got dark fast.
Well, anyway. You have your romantic soulmate, your best friend soulmate, your mirror soulmate.
Oh, my arch nemesis. I wonder who that would be.
Debbie from accounting.
It's me. It's also myself. My red string of fate to my arch nemesis is a
problem.
It's me.
All right.
Hi. I'm the problem. It's me.
So, okay, get it out, ladies.
Sorry.
No, you're fine.
We are, in fact, the problem.
We it's are, fine. In fact, the problem.
It's fine. So, what I found interesting about Hindu and love is when I first moved down here, I had a good friend who is Indian. She's Hindu. She had an arranged marriage to another Hindu gentleman who I also know, who's very, very nice. They had met before they were married, so it wasn't like a traditional arranged marriage, and they are the same age, or a few, it's like within 3 years. It's not a huge age gap, whatever. She was of age. It was non-traditional in the matter that she married outside of her class. She actually married below her class, because that's still a huge thing in India. But she and her husband actually ended up getting married at like a very specific time at like 3:45 in the morning on like a random Tuesday, because their spiritual person. I'm not the advisor, the spiritual advisor, because they're both Hindu, looked at their birth charts and found out where their houses were that affected their love, and kind of calculated what day and even what time and minute would be the most beneficial for a healthy, happy future love. And I thought that was super interesting, and I had never heard anything quite like that before. And the marriages in Indian culture and Hindu culture last forever. They're like a 7-day event, and each day is a different like a different ritual and a different
type of party
practice. Yeah, it's a huge party. And I got to be so lucky. They had two receptions. So they had obviously the 7-day wedding and its reception in India. And then they came back here to Florida and had a reception for all of the people who could not go to India. And they played a highlight reel on this huge like projector. They like pretty much rented out an amphitheater. It was so cool. And to be a part of it was just so interesting. They played all of these highlights and all of these rituals played on the screen, and people like tossing food at them, and they're supposed to catch a certain amount, and it's supposed to represent like how many children they'll have. There's a similar ritual in, I think, Korean culture, where they throw like nuts at the bride and they're supposed to catch them in their skirt or something. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, it's their hanbok skirt.
Yeah. And it's a similar thing in the Hindu culture. And there are like all of these huge, beautiful garlands, and everything is so bright. And I don't know, it's just so vastly different from like a traditional American wedding and a traditional, like, you go to a church, you wear a white dress, you say the things. Okay, boppity boopity. See you later.
Boppity boopity.
Yeah, it seems so much more loving and spiritual. And when she had her reception here, seeing all of that was just, and then being a part of it was so cool. Because the bride and groom are really treated like deities. And I mean that with the utmost respect. They are up on a stage. They have special seats that they have to sit in. Their feet aren't allowed to touch the ground. They have to walk on flower petals, all of this very cool stuff. And like, if you want a picture with them, you have to wait in a line. And like, a person has to tell you, okay, now you can go. This is where you will stand. Okay, 1, 2, 3. Okay, good. It's very cool. And the food is so good. Like, it was a really cool experience. And like, they did some of the rituals during the reception, but they like, I wasn't comfortable obviously participating because it's not my culture, it's not my place. I was asked like, oh hey, do you want to do the thing? And I was like, I don't want to offend anybody or say the wrong thing, which I have absolutely said yes before in that situation and was way in over my head. Like, I went to temple once way back in the day in like 2010. I went to temple with my Jewish boyfriend and should not have. Absolutely should not have. You are separated by genders. There are prayers. You do some things with your hands. You speak in Hebrew. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm saying or doing. Like, I'm so sorry. I'm like really uncomfortable. It was a mess. So observing was, you know, enough for me during the Hindu reception. And it was so cool. Hindu is something I've always really enjoyed. And I even eventually will get a tattoo of Kali Ma. Just because, again, so cool. But yeah, it was the colors. Something else I've noticed. Red, always the color. Always the color.
Yeah.
And no clue why. Is it because you bleed red? Because your insides are red?
I don't know. I just know it's lucky. It's considered
it's lucky. It's
Let's
lucky.
Let's give it a goo.
And I don't know why.
Let's give it a goo.
I know.
Did you just say give it a googs?
Yeah. Give it a goog.
Love it. Love it.
I know with most, like, Asian, East Asian cultures, white is for death and burial.
Oh, how interesting. Like,
that's why, especially if an Indian or Chinese, Korean, pretty much anywhere in Asia, man marries a white woman, his family goes really hard. Like, you cannot wear a white dress for the wedding.
Yeah.
Please do not wear a white dress because it's, in their culture, it's inviting death and despair into your marriage.
That is something I think if I had married somebody outside of my culture who had like a highly spiritual culture like that, there's no doubt in my mind I would have been like, okay, yes, absolutely, I'm not wearing white. Okay. If these are your strong beliefs, yes, I'm here to respect those. I'm not to do,
Outside of that, even if I was marrying like an Indian man, like saris are gorgeous. As a white woman, just buying a sari. If I was marrying an Indian man and they were like, you have to wear a sari because of this, 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 and this. I'm just like, fuck yes. That's my excuse now to wear a sari.
I have worn one as, I think I was 14 or 15. We had a woman in our church who lived in India, but she was white. And she came back with all of these saris and these bindis, and they were just like so pretty. And she put me in one, and I felt like the prettiest girl at the party. You know, like I felt like an absolute princess. And I get it. Like, oh, my Facebook videos. I don't know if you guys are ever on Facebook anymore, but there's like a video section. It's very similar to Reels. My Facebook video section is 100% almost all Indian wedding related things. I have no idea why.
Because they're gorgeous. Just
stunning.
Just enjoy the prettiness.
Yeah. Just look at the pretty. And they're just, oh.
So.
Go ahead.
Red is associated with the heart, which is the center of love and emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Also associated with desire and passion. So. Where was that? I just read something. It's also because red is the color of blood, and when we're injured, there's often blood. When people get angry, upset, aroused, or embarrassed, their face and rest of their body will turn red.
Ooh. Called that. It's also, well, never mind. As I say, it's also the color my face gets if I have too much to drink. But that's, I guess that would be arousal. Arousing of the blood.
Yeah.
And the blood flowing.
So I got to celebrate my anniversary last night, which we normally do like a twofer anniversary and Valentine's Day. We had a fantastic steak dinner and we got a dozen roses, which were absolutely stunning. I've never seen roses like them. They're yellow and green and pink in like an ombre effect. They're stunning. But yeah, the local fresh food supermarket does this thing on the holidays where you can pay like $50 for a dinner for two. And it's like, like we paid $50 and got two very large filet mignon, steamable vegetables, whipped mashed potatoes, a dozen roses, chocolate dipped strawberries, and a bottle of wine.
Nice.
You couldn't get that anywhere else. So, as far as actually doing anything on Valentine's Day, I don't know what I'm gonna do. I may do something. I may not. I may talk to Lilith. I may not.
The only thing I know I'm not doing is I'm not going out because everywhere is so crowded.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, for sure.
my Valentine's Day will be really fun because one, husband is calling off work, okay?
Ooh.
But not for what you might think. I have a crazy person, a doctor's appointment.
Ah.
I have to get my meds. I have an appointment. The only day that they could put me in was on Valentine's Day at 5:30. So I will go to work, go directly to my parents, drop off Gray, mm-hmm. and go to the doctor's. And then go home and sleep. Because I have
You're not the only one with a doctor's appointment that day. I had to schedule my husband's first, like, primary care physician's doctor's appointment probably in 20 years for Valentine's Day. Because it was either
the only day.
It was the only day in like five months. Like, and I scheduled this back in December. And they were like, okay, well, we have one on Valentine's Day and then we have one in May. And I was like, okay, well, I'm not doing anything at 9 a.m. on Valentine's Day anyway. I have work. Like,
yeah.
I guess do it on Valentine's Day.
Yes, this is what we're doing.
Yeah, it was the because my original appointment was scheduled for the 3rd, but she doesn't like stay after on, I think it was like Thursdays or Fridays or whatever day it was, the 3rd.
Yeah.
And so they had to reschedule it, and the earliest they could take me in for the reschedule was on Valentine's Day. And they're like, her evening appointments just get filled up real fast. And of course, nobody's going to want an appointment in the evening on Valentine's Day. And I have to get an evening appointment or I have to call off work and I have no more call-offs because I got sick.
Yeah.
So.
The American dream.
I love it.
Hate it. Can't stand it. Living it.
Can't living stand it.
It's currently so living it.
So I don't know if we'll actually do anything. But it's really hard to do anything like really big with a toddler because you have to find a babysitter. Mm-hmm. And like I'm not ready to leave him overnight at my parents, even though he wants to spend the night with my parents. I'm not ready for that personally.
Yeah.
I don't think he'll be able to do it. I don't think he'll be able to handle it. He says he will, but I don't think he will. Because he's so used to us being with him at night. So I don't know. So, probably won't do anything at all. Yay.
Well, and you don't have to do it on Valentine's Day. It can be a different day. That's like what my husband and I do. We just do it on the 9th because there's not a point in doing two things. Because money and...
Well, there's also money.
Motivation.
Yeah. Money and then, you know, his work schedule, my work schedule. And
the way my bank account is set up is...
Especially that one.
Yeah. Like my paycheck is like this is the off week. Valentine's Day is the off week. And I was like,
I get paid on the 15th.
Oh, lay.
Same.
I get paid on the 15th and the 30th of every month. Unless it falls on a weekend. Yeah. Then it's the Friday before.
Yeah.
And in this case, this month the 29th, because there is no 30th. But but yeah, so then I have no money. So we got bills and
I have no money. And I am what is it? That's from something. Anyway. Sorry, that's the ADHD kicking in.
It's also like personally going out and having like a nice dinner and everything for Valentine's Day loses its charm when you have kids.
Yeah.
Because like as nice as it is to like have some alone time and everything, you're still like worried about the kids, so you can't fully enjoy it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So it's like easier to just have like I'll make him a nice dinner or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Oh, my back won't pop.
Uh-oh.
Oh yeah.
Been hurting since I redid this room.
Yeah, I think I've been hurting since I turned 30. Husband a Valentine's Day card.
I do that every year,
and then give it to him at home after work. Because I'm a big fucking nerd.
One year, I hand bound him. It was actually last year. I hand bound him a book. Right, you know how I made you both hand bound, hand stitched spell books, grimoires, whatever you want to call them. I did that for him, but it was like this big, And it had a little heart cut out with like a clear placing there. Mm-hmm. And then it was like a little book that had like every year we've been together. It was a photo of us and like little notes. And it's like this big. It's like maybe 3x3.
That's adorable. Like,
I did it all at work. I did it all at work. So of course, like sitting there in my planning period, like putting this tiny little book together, and the kids are like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "None of your business."
I am participating in the ancient practice of Nanya.
Right. And then
but I'm sure some of the football players or whatever in your classes should take notes.
That's the thing. They probably should. And one year I his favorite I painted his favorite Keyblade from Kingdom Hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I cannot remember the name of it to save my life, but I also made him a sculpture of it.
Oh, cool.
Oh, I can't remember what the name of that one is.
I can't.
It's Riku's.
Yeah, it's Riku's. It's his favorite Keyblade. I painted him one year, and then this was like a couple years ago. Like, I did for him. I think this was a Christmas present, though. But
hang on. It's called The Way to the Dawn.
The Way to Dawn.
The Way to Dawn. Yeah.
The Way to the Dawn.
Yeah, that's his favorite one.
All right. Hang on. Let me get up our plethora of shits.
Well, while you're doing that, we hope you enjoyed this week's episode for Love Daddies and cute little love stories from cute little love stories from different cultures that we usually talk about. Catch us on all the things that Saya says.
If you like what you heard, you can go ahead and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Threads, and now TikTok at The Witchy Spellcast.
All right.
That's it. That's all I got.
That's all you got.
New episodes every other week.
Yep. Doop, 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 doop. Peace out.
Rowan, say bye.
Rowan, say bye.
Go?
Oh, no.
Hello. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Awkward AF.
Thanks for tuning in to The Witchy Spellcast. We hope you enjoyed this mystical journey with us. If you've been bewitched by our show, don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating or review. It helps us spread the magic to more listeners. Remember, the power of the craft is always with you. Keep those cauldrons bubbling, wands at the ready, and may your spells always find their mark. Until next time, blessed be.